my name is Carlos Pascual, Senior Vice President for Global Energy and International Affairs at IHS Markit, and it's a pleasure to welcome you to these CERAWeek conversations. This is an opportunity for us to have exclusive conversations with thought leaders from government, from industry, the finance world, academia, who are addressing the changes in the energy sector during this time of the COVID pandemic, but also through the energy transition and how these issues are brought together. Today, we have an opportunity to focus on energy policy issues with a special focus on Colombia, but beyond that, the global issues that translate back into the tough choices that policy leaders and ministers have to make in countries. And we have with us today, leading this conversation, Energy Minister of Colombia, Maria Fernanda Suarez. Minister Suarez, thank you very much for being with us. Thank you for having this conversation.
Carlos, good afternoon. Happy to be at this moment with you and with all the IHS people looking at this interview.
I hope you're well. I hope your family's well. I hope you're able to stay safe.
Yes, fortunately, we have been safe, and same for everybody in IHS and for all the people looking. We have all to stay at home and safe.
Thank you. Today, Minister Suarez and I want to take you through a conversation that starts with setting the context in Colombia and what's happening globally around the world, and then bring that back to a discussion on policy, policy that ranges from consumers to industry, from oil reserves to climate change. And in the end, one of the key points I want to come back to is the role that energy policy leaders are addressing to mitigate risk in this time of uncertainty. But let's start with the context. And Minister Suarez, if you could tell us a little bit about the situation in Colombia now and how these dual effects of the COVID pandemic as well as the oil price collapse have been affecting you and your challenges there in Colombia.
Well, I'll have to start by saying that I think this is a time that it's challenging us all around the world, all the people, all the leaders. And I will say that on the energy ministers, we have a double burden, the burden of COVID and how it's impacting lives and demand, and the burden on oil and how the drop in prices, it's affecting the performance of the industry. So from the macroeconomic part of Colombia, what we are experiencing is a double shock, a shock due to the decrease in the global demand and in the local demand, and how that it's affecting our refineries, how it's affecting our demand, and the shock coming on the national revenues due to the lower oil prices. In Colombia, around 15% of national income comes from royalties, taxes, and dividends coming from the oil and gas industry. So we have been working very intensively in these last 4 weeks in addressing both challenges together.
I think shock is a good word to use when describing the situation. And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about how did you prepare the population to deal with these shocks so that they would feel like they were complying and doing part of their national duty?
Well, I think that Colombia has been fortunate that government took decisions very early. So at the first case of COVID started on March 6th. In Colombia, that was the first case that we discovered. And decisions started to being taken by March 15. And by the second week after the first case, we had a stay-home voluntary pilot process in major capitals and then a mandatory national quarantine. So I will say that there were different kinds, like people that are exposed to international news, that we're very aware and very concerned of what government will be doing. And there are people, and those are more direct to the places where oil and gas operations take place, that were more surprised, I will say, by the decisions. And I say that for the population, it has been a shock to absorb both things happening simultaneously. But what we have done, it's a lot of communication at all government levels, in different levels. I think that we have been working very closely with companies, and that it's something that we believe it has been successful, because since the very start of what we saw on that weekend of March 6 to 8, when we start oil prices dropping. We've started to work very hard with companies on how we will be addressing this issue. And then we have expanded that not only to the oil and gas sector, but the electricity and mining sector on how we will be dealing together with private companies and with local authorities, all that has to do with COVID.
Minister, let's take a step back and to the domestic context, let's add the global context. And this past week, we were really in a historic situation, seeing the negotiations of OPEC Plus, the G20 ministers, for the first time the United States being involved in these kinds of discussions that involve overall supply in the marketplace. Your reactions?
Well, I will say that first, we have all to keep in mind, these are extraordinary times. These are times that it's an unprecedented scenario. I will say nobody in the world was thinking about this scenario in any of the risk scenarios that they made any assessments. And we believe that since there are extraordinary times, we need extraordinary measures. And we are very supportive of all the agreements that we have seen in OPEC Plus, in G20, and among other countries that can contribute to, stabilize the macroeconomic scenario and the oil price that comes with a stable macroeconomic scenario. And I will say that this is a good example that I guess we will be seeing not just for oil prices, that the best way that we as a world can face these huge challenges that we are facing is working jointly and working in global efforts to address this challenge. So we are very supportive of all the announcements being made by OPEC Plus and by G20, and we expect that also to be followed to work jointly in other efforts, because we will also need to boost demand at some stage.
So working from this foundation of the joint efforts that have started, if you take that back to Colombia, how do you set the priorities for yourself and for the ministry in Colombia? What are the drivers of policy for you now?
I will say that I have also the electricity sector under my shoulders. So I will say that my priorities first is that I need to make sure that in all houses of Colombia, they will have electricity and gas working all time, not matter the stage of the pandemic. And many people take that as given, to have utilities on their homes every day. But there are, I will say, heroes on the streets, making sure that this is a reality and that this is happening. So my first focus is to assure that all Colombians have electricity and gas. And we have been working since the very start of March on making sure that all companies review the risk assessments and the continuity of business to make sure on how they will look under a pandemic scenario. The second is regarding, utility prices, and how, since we have all the users of the utilities with the economic burden because of the economic situation, we need to make sure that we open spaces that weren't open before, so people can really pay for the utilities, but with some type of flexibility. So that will be my second priority. And my third priority, it's regarding making sure that electricity, the oil and gas industry, and the mining industry keeps their pace. This is an area that in Colombia hasn't closed. All the workers of industry can still go to work, because we understand this as an industry. We need gasoline so the ambulance can work, and we need gas for all the households. So all workers of this industry can still work. So we are implementing all the protocols in order to make sure that industry can work in a very safely way. And of course, the other issue is regarding the economic perspective and how to make sure that we are a point of help for companies, for investment to keep track, and for works to be maintained, and to make sure that we continue the oil and gas industry to be an important part of the growth of the Colombian economy.
You've thought this through very well, Minister. People, power, oil, and jobs, and that seems like a very sound foundation. What kind of reaction are you getting from people?
Well, I will say we have a diverse reaction. I will say that there are people that are very concerned because they see workers on the street or workings in the apart regions of Colombia, and they believe that those workers can take the virus to their cities, and that's something that it has been hard to address. However, I think that one of the strengths of the oil and gas industry is the importance of health and safety in the operational standards. It has been something that it's part of the culture, and the discipline around health and safety, it's definitely something that industry needs to leverage right now, because we need to make sure this virus is going to live with us for a longer period of time than the current time. And the only way that we can balance economy and health is that we put all the protocols. So my expectations is that with all protocols set in place, industry will be the industry to follow in terms of operating in a safety environment.
Putting safety first is certainly a critical and strong message. And indeed, one of the things that is that countries are battling with all over the world is when to open up. When can people go back to work? And I'm sure industry is raising these questions with you as well. What kind of messages are you getting from industry?
Well, we had, I will say, diverse questions. We have some companies that are ahead and that are actually an example for the rest of the industry. And we had some companies that had some lack regarding what we were experiencing. This is something that was too quickly. And I think that part of this unprecedented shock is not the size of the shock, but how it changed everything as we knew it 1 month ago. So we were seeing, I will say, different speeds of people making sure that it's part of their daily lives. And on that side, what we have done is that we have leveraged a lot, for example, on Ecopetrol, that has a very high standard and a very high health and safety practices. And since very early, I will say, by the end of February, was already taking actions on coronavirus. So it had implemented a lot of policy that we used them to leverage the rest of the industry. So the last thing that we did is that we issue best practices to be adopted in operations in industry, and we issue that circular with the Minister of Health. So it's a regulation that we issue Minister of Health and Minister of Mines and Energy, and had set the best practice guidelines for all the industry. This is something that has been helpful for many companies, and that has also been very helpful for local authorities to make sure that if those companies are complying with those best practices, then they are operating in a safely way for the workers and for the communities where they operate.
The last time I was in Bogota, you gave a very, very powerful speech that focused on the oil industry. And in particular, you addressed the issue of reserves and the need to rebuild reserves. At this point, given the price environment in which we're in and the issues that you mentioned on the collapse of demand, how are you thinking about these issues? Are they deferred, or is this an agenda that you're studying and trying to figure out how to act on it aggressively as soon as the market changes?
Well, I do believe that I cannot start thinking about reserves. When you think about reserve, it's because we are all very conscious that this industry takes time in order to build reserves. And of course, we will see an economy decreasing significantly as IMF put some projections, or everybody in the world is putting all the projections down for 2020. But we also see that on 2021 and onwards, we should expect, I will say, a B recovery, hopefully, and that will mean definitely a significant increase in all the energy. So we have also to think reserves on that scenario. And on that scenario, I think that we keep the importance of building reserves. Of course, we are aware that during these periods where we have companies that have their cash flows being under pressure, that the prices scenario are, I would say, still under a lot of uncertainty in the medium term. We will expect to see decreases in CapEx investments, mainly in exploration, and I will say projects on the south of 50s or by the mid upper 40s to be delayed. And what we are doing is that we are helping companies to navigate through those environments. So we are accelerating, for example, tax reforms, refunds, and we are delaying some schedule for obligatory investments and those kinds of issues. But what we believe is that we have to help navigate the companies through this process, but we need to make sure that whenever this starts up, people are absolutely ready to pick up very quickly.
That's an excellent point, and focusing on the fiscal environment, the near term can be a foundation point for where you go in the future. And if I can use that to turn to another topic that is generational in a sense, and climate change, a topic you care about personally very much. In this kind of an environment, how do you deal with these challenges of climate change and the cross-generational issues that are involved when there's a crisis that people are facing today?
I will say that, that on the positive side, we have all learned how we can really accelerate changing our life habits in order to decrease energy demand. We have seen that it's so easy to have conference calls, to have to do virtual job, I will say, as a whole. And definitely that's something that will be good overall, and I will say it will be one of the best outcomes coming from this COVID crisis. On the other side, I will say that people are appreciating. I will not say they did not appreciate it before, but now that we are all suffering from that, on the importance of a robust economy working well and having jobs. And that balance will give us, I will say, the stage, the new stage for how we should address climate change. And I will say that when we talk about sustainability, we need to have those variables all in place. It's not just about sustainability on one part of the equation, but sustainability about people and how they're going to live. So we need to make sure that we can use all efforts to have energy efficiency and not use energy in the way that we do not need to, that we change to clean energy as much as we can. But I will say that there is a higher conscious that the road to take is not to stop economy from working. So that will give us a different world stage on how we address the climate change discussion. I will also say that on that, when you see how global energy demand, and I will say not just energy on oil, but also in electricity, you still have that you will have a significant amount of CO2 reductions, of course, due to lower transportation and due to lower industrial activity. But you do see how much CO2 emissions are produced just by the consumption of households. And that's something that you can just not take out of the equation. So you will have a more cleaner data to understand that this industry, as we have said many times, we as the oil and gas industry are an industry that we produce a service to the population. Of course, there are more cleaner ways to do it. We still have to work very hard, for example, in CO2 capture and storage. We need to still working on switching to clean energy and to energy efficiency, but we need to take all the new data and all new behaviors into consideration for the new stage after the coronavirus.
And as you take all of that data into consideration, what kind of priority does it make you focus on as you think about diversification of your energy systems for the future?
I will say absolutely key. One of the things that you learn when you have a black swan scenario, and I will say that it's a double black swan scenario. In my life, I used to start working in trading and risk assessment. And I also thought of black swans, but never on a double black swan scenario, like the one we're experiencing. The lesson learned is that diversification is the name of the game when you want to mitigate risk. And all that you see with what is happening and we're experiencing right now, and what we can see with climate change, or what you can see of what you do not see, that is the unexpected, that is what we are living right now, is that as much as you diversify, you are better prepared to face any risk that can develop. So regarding the energy diversification and increasing the percentage of clean energy into the matrix and increasing wind and solar, I will say that it is important, and it is still more important now than ever.
Minister, you've been extraordinarily generous with your time and very, very thoughtful in your answers. I take away from this a whole range of points, but in particular, first, you emphasize that if we have a joint problem, we need joint solutions, we have to be able to work together. The priorities that you set, the way that you put it, people, power systems, oil, jobs, the ability of the economy to function, very clear cut in the way you're setting priorities. And finally, the importance of diversification. It's been a pleasure, as always, Minister Maria Fernanda Suarez, of Energy Minister of Colombia. Thank you very much for joining us in these CERAWeek conversations.
Thank you, Carlos. It has been a pleasure. And as you mentioned, I think that IHAs plays a critical role in making joint efforts, and we need those joint efforts more than ever. So let's continue working on that.
Thank you.